Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello, everybody, and welcome once again to a very special edition of Atlanta Business Radio. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Ryan McPherson, sitting in here in the host seat today, and this is a spotlight episode where we'll be discussing finance, entrepreneurship, leadership, current trends in the industry, and much, much more. Before we introduce our guest, let me remind you to make sure you are connected with us on social media, Twitter, at Business Radio X, and you can follow the show today at Atlanta Business Radio. That's Atlanta B-I-Z Radio. And you can check us out on Facebook, see our photos of in-studio guests, leave your thoughts and comments there, and connect with us again on the social media stratosphere. And it's now my distinct pleasure to welcome to Atlanta Business Radio two gentlemen here today, David Holstrom with Financial Architects and Matthew Foschnot with Meridian Investment Partners. How you doing, guys?
Doing great, thanks.
All right, I got that right. Foschnot, right?
You're close, okay. Foschnot.
Foschnot. Well, we'll just go by Matthew from here on out. How about that? So we'll start with you then, Matthew. Tell us a little bit about your background and what led you up here today to be discussing Meridian Investment Partners.
Thank you for having me here, Ryan. Meridian Investment Partners is a registered investment advisory firm here based in Atlanta. And we're experts in the fields of investment and taxes and strive to maximize clients' after-tax returns based on their risk tolerance. Mm-hmm. So we work closely with our clients to develop an investment plan and strategy that aligns with their personal risk tolerance. And each client has their own separately managed accounts. And implementing the plan, we minimize investment costs and taxes for our clients. And we also specialize in retirement planning, comprehensive wealth management, portfolio management, tax planning, and strategy. And I've personally been managing portfolios for nearly 15 years and founded Meridian Investment Partners in 2011. We have two main investment strategies that are based on the risk profile of the client. Our aggressive stock strategy is for a working individual normally under the age of 55 and has returned 75.64% from 2011 to 2015 versus the S&P 500 return of 59.15% for an outperformance of 16.49%. And our more moderate bond and stock strategy is more tailored to retired individuals and less risk tolerance investors. This strategy has returned 38.62% from 2011 to 2015.
Well, that's great news. You're sharing some good information there. But you founded the company in 2011, right?
Yes.
Yeah. What were you doing up until then?
I was mostly working in corporate America. I was working for Delta Airlines and their financial department. I also, what kind of led me to get into the business was, you know, when I was in college, my family experienced a significant windfall and then resulted in probably lots of mismanagement of the wealth. And I had to come in there and clean that up and help manage the portfolio.
You had to manage your own family's finances first and foremost.
Yes.
But you enjoyed it so much that you wanted to make a career out of that, and then doubly enjoyed it that you wanted to start a company helping people with this.
Yeah, that's correct. I became enthralled with a lot of the principles of successful investing and read every book I could get my hands on. Some of my favorites were about the practicality of Warren Buffett, and I developed a desire to know as much as possible about investments leading to participate in the CFA Institute program and earn the Chartered Financial Analyst Charter Holder credential.
All right. So we look forward to talking more in detail about your company and about your entrepreneurial journey. But let's also bring in David Holstrom to the conversation. He's with Financial Architects. How are you, David?
Doing fine. Thanks, Ryan.
All right. Share with a little bit us and our listeners, please, if you would, about your background and what led you up here today.
Sure. Well, I started off in the industry right out of college a long time ago. Got hired as a stockbroker, a really tiny firm. And even my first months there, I looked around the office and thought, not only do I not know what I'm doing, I don't think anybody in the room knows what they're doing. They're just selling stuff to people over the phone. And so I sort of went on a long journey to get more credentialed and more knowledgeable so I could do a good job for clients. So I worked in the home office for broker-dealer. I learned tax preparation. I worked, did some tax stuff for a while. I did internal auditing for a while. I worked for a company that made software for financial advisors, Monte Carlo simulation, which sounds like gambling, but it's just a math technique for modeling uncertainty. And then relaunched my own firm as an independent fee-only RIA, much like Matthew, in about 2002, but moved to Atlanta in 2004.
Okay. And Financial Architects has been around since?
Yes.
Okay. And what type of clients are you normally serving?
Typically work with high net worth people. Let me differentiate a couple different ways we work with clients, because then we work with different types of clients. if we manage clients' money, they typically have more than $1 million of investable assets. But we found that there's so many people that just need help with the planning end. So we don't really have a minimum on that if somebody's willing to pay to get a financial plan done and get their insurance reviewed and their taxes reviewed and their investments reviewed, then we do that without a minimum. But then they don't qualify to sort of transition into the money management piece unless they have enough assets to sort of make it worth their while and ours both.
So that makes sense. And there's so many layers to this kind of industry. How do you know what lanes to stay in or specialize in yourself?
Yeah, that's a great question. We specialize in the investment management piece, as does Matthew. And we refer out the rest. For example, we review clients' estate planning. We read all the documents, but we're not attorneys. So if we see something that looks like a problem, we refer it out. We review their insurance, but we don't sell insurance. We refer it out. And so sort of my quick and dirty way to know whether someone is what I would call a real financial planner or not is, do they recommend the umbrella liability policy, right, for the insurance? Because virtually nobody sells that. And people who are just doing financial planning to try to spur a product sale would rarely get into that kind
of
thing.
So that's a good, if I'm a consumer, I'm looking to, you know, put my money with a trusted and respected financial planner, that would be something to look at. And if they are just selling umbrella plans, that maybe not be the best route for me to go.
No, what I'm saying is if they recommended an umbrella liability policy, that they probably are doing the right thing because they probably don't sell that. You'd have to go to your I won't say any company names here, but go to your property casualty agent and they would sell that.
I see.
Same thing with recommending a home equity line of credit for emergency funds. You know, most folks don't sell loan products. So that would be another
credit. Right. All right. And Matthew, from your perspective, what are some of the things that differentiate you and your organization from so many others out there providing similar services?
I think the biggest difference is I focus very much on minimizing taxes for my clients as well. I provide tax preparation services as well. Biggest thing would be tax planning as well. Yeah. So,
and that's a big deal this time of year.
Yes.
Right. So what are some of the common mistakes you see that people are making when not preparing their taxes or are doing the right thing there?
Well, for 2016, let me back up a second. For 2015, there's not much you can do right now. The kind of the hay is in the barn, but there's lots of plaques. Planning things that you can do for 2016. I'll give you an example of something I saw recently. I saw a client that sold a couple investment properties, some rental properties, and for probably gains about $50,000 each. Took the proceeds of those, reinvested it back into other rental properties. Now, if he had talked to someone and got advice, he would have found out there's something called a 1031 exchange that he could do that would have allowed him to not have to pay any taxes on those gains on the properties.
Right.
He could have saved himself a significant chunk of money. And the other thing I see is, you know, a lot of investors hold on to losing stocks too long. They don't take their losses, and those losses are valuable to take on the tax return. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people just refuse to. There's a phenomenon called loss aversion. People don't want to realize their losses. Sometimes that's the best thing to do.
Yeah.
Just to kind of cut your losers.
And what about you, David? Any common mistakes you see businesses and people making when it comes to filing their taxes?
Yeah, well, I would agree with Matthew. And we don't prepare taxes. We do review clients' tax returns and pay attention to tax strategies. So let me sort of change lanes a little bit from what Matthew talked about. Things that I'm sure they do and that we do is make sure that the portfolio is allocated correctly for taxes. So asset location strategy, putting the right things in the right buckets. So the least tax efficient assets are in your retirement plans and your most tax efficient assets in your taxable account. Reducing portfolio turnover. Matthew touched on this, tax loss harvesting. Right now, where the market has been down some, a lot of people have opportunities to recognize some losses and get those booked. And so all those things are really important. Our industry as a whole tends to focus a lot on trying to find the next Google or the next whatever, and much less on vacuuming up all the nickels that are right in front of them, like keep your costs down and keep your taxes down and things like that that you can actually control versus the very speculative trying to find the next big thing.
Yeah, that's very sound advice for sure. As most people probably, in my mind, procrastinate as well. They put everything off to the last minute and then expect work done immediately. So preparing your taxes, having a good plan is part of a year-long strategy and not just, you know, a crunch time right before taxes are due, I would imagine.
Absolutely.
Right. And so do you the clients yourself that you're working with, are you, you know, talking with them on a regular basis to make sure that doesn't sneak up on you as well?
Well, we talk to them, but we also have, if we manage their investment portfolios, we have what's called full discretion, which means they've sort of outsourced it to us. So, for example, last month in January, I spent a fair amount of time doing trades in accounts just to harvest those losses, as we were talking about. We don't call the client and say, I'm going to sell this stuff in your account. They've signed paperwork that lets us just take care of it. We have high net worth people that they find good professionals and they outsource stuff to them. So that's what we do for them.
And I imagine trust is a big part of this for you and your clients as well.
Absolutely.
And continuing to build that trust and maintain that trust, you know, and right out of the gate, you've got to have a solid foundation of trust. Otherwise, you're not doing good business and the client then may go somewhere else. I would think too, when people get hooked up with a good financial planner, they stay with them for years and years. And as their life evolves, their plans can evolve too. Is that what you see, Matthew?
That's very true. Most people don't like to make changes in this industry. They like to kind of get comfortable with one person and stick with them.
So how are you then actively out there marketing your services to find new clients?
That's a good question.
That's number two, by the way. Good question. Just so everybody listening out there.
That's probably the biggest challenge I find in this industry. It's hard to compete being a little guy against a lot of the advertising that you see that the bigger firms have. But I do some advertising on the web. There's a service called Wiser Advisor that matches up clients with independent financial advisors that are looking to help clients and getting out and really just networking and meeting people.
Boots on the ground, shaking hands, talking to people. What about power partners, people who refer you from other industries, lawyers, estate planners, anything like that?
I've heard that that can be very successful. I'm not too involved with that.
You're finding partners of industry of some kind who know you resonate with in a like-minded business professional way. What about you, David? And partners like that for you?
Yeah, we do have some of those. We also get a lot of referrals from clients. And our client base is slightly different than a lot of other advisors in the sense that most advisors have clients within some radius of their office, say within 5 or 10 miles. And we've actually got about half our clients are in Georgia. The other half are all over the country. And the only sort of commonality I see to a lot of them is they tend to be, well, first of all, high net worth, of course, but very analytical, very, very smart people. So we talked about certified financial planners. I think Matthew and I are both certified financial planners. I have a couple clients who are certified financial planners, but they don't practice. And so we manage their money. They give great referrals because they know that we know what we're doing. So we get referrals from a lot of clients. I also have a client who is an attorney that sues advisors for a living who have messed up client portfolios. And my peers sometimes think I'm insane to take him as an actual client, but he only sues people who are idiots. So you do good work. You're fine.
Right, yeah.
But he gets asked constantly, how do we find a good advisor? Who would you recommend? And so he's a great source of referrals, obviously. He doesn't refer me his clients because they have already lost their money and they tend to be litigious. So I'm not sure I would want to go down that path.
Yeah, this is a big pool to play in. I mean, you've got big corporations doing this. You've got solopreneurs. You've got small to medium-sized businesses. And separating yourself, are ways of just doing good work, servicing your community, and continuing to help people get the most out of their money, I think is a great way to continue that. And so we talked a little bit about tax planning. We're in that middle of that season. Like you mentioned, it's a little late for 2015 taxes, but for 2016, how about investing right now? Is this a good time to invest? David?
That's a good question. So philosophically, there you go. So philosophically, there's no patterns in the market. There's a tendency for lay people to think that because it went down, therefore it's now cheap. Now, it's certainly cheaper, but it doesn't mean it can't go down further. The market follows what's called in the literature a random walk. So it's always a good time to invest.
Right.
Now, every once in a while, you might say it gets crazy. But by and large, I think that markets are efficient, which means they tend to be correctly priced. Capitalism works. There's a lot of really smart people trying to find mispriced securities. Mm-hmm. So it tends to drive prices to their equilibrium state. Mm-hmm. So it feels like a better time to invest now than it was a couple months ago. And it is because it's cheaper. But that doesn't tell you anything useful about where it may go going forward.
Yeah. You got to know the trends that are happening in the market. You know, so if everybody's losing a little, you can still make a little if you're investing right. And then the same thing when the market's on an upswing, making sure you're pointing your money in the right direction to make a return there. So and what about from your perspective, Matthew? Is this a good time to invest?
It's always a good time to invest. I agree. But it's definitely a time to reduce risk, I would say.
Okay. So safer investments would be one way to reduce
exactly.
risk.
I've moved a lot more into bonds and consumer type staples. I believe the market topped out back on May 2015, and earnings growth has stalled since about 2014. Mm-hmm. So the global economy has really slowed significantly over the past year, as witnessed by commodity prices. I'm not all that bullish on taking significant risk in your portfolio right now. I'm more about capital preservation. And I believe that we've had a long 6-year bull market since about 2009. I think that is essentially can't come to an end, and we need to reduce risk.
So reduce risk is a way to prepare for the trends you see happening coming in the market in the rest of 2016 and beyond, because we don't know for sure, but having a safe security blanket of finance is a good method, regardless of which way the market may be heading, I would think.
It's always, smart to just be safe enough so that you can sleep mm-hmm. at night and not have to worry about the daily fluctuations so much of your portfolio.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So for those listeners who may have just joined us, we're talking with David Holstrom with Financial Architects and Matthew Fosnot with Meridian Investment Partners here today on Atlanta Business Radio. And so what about some important factors for you when servicing a client? How do you measure success for a client? Is it because they give you more business, or is it because they've saved a ton of money, or somewhere in between?
I would say somewhere in between. It is very nice. It's, one of the biggest compliments that you can get is when someone refers you off to someone like your friends or family. But I do take pride in increasing my client's net worth. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I really take pride in is providing investment results better than they could if they just invested in basically an index fund.
Right.
So that's why I, have shown significant outperformance in the strategies that I employ over the last 5 years since I've been doing this.
Right. So and what about your investment strategy? Do you follow your same secret sauce there, or do you have someone else helping and guiding you?
No, I do. I do all the research on my own. I do follow everything that I invest in the same companies and stocks that I put a lot of all my clients.
Right. Yeah. In. So you're not just talking the talk, you're walking the walk too.
I do.
And your clients can resonate with that, I imagine.
I do. I eat my own cooking. So
that's good.
I believe that that's very important.
No, it definitely is. People want to know, what are you doing? And there's an old saying, the cobbler's shoes, kids have no shoes because he's off making shoes for everyone else. So you actually have some good shoes and you want to share other good shoes with your clients as well. So I think that's fantastic. Looking forward to 2016, some benchmarks with your business or places you're going to be, events that you attend, where do you go to stay ahead of the cutting edge in the industry itself?
I go to a lot of CFA type meetings, which is a local business networking group here associated with my credentials. I attend lots of workshops.
Workshops is good. Trade shows. Do you get conventions? That side of, do you go and gather with other financial planners to kind of, talk shop with them?
Not as much as I should.
Right.
Not as much as I should. I need to get out more and do those type of things. But I mostly have been just doing a lot of continuing public education.
Well, if we hear of anything, we'll certainly pass on the news for you. And because we're often out at trade shows and different events ourselves, representing, Business Radio X. So that's a good place where you can find us. What about you, David? Where do you go to stay kind of up to date on what the current trends in the industry are?
I actually go to a lot of things. I'm a member of both NAFA, which is the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors. They have a quarterly study group. I'm on the board of the Financial Planning Association here in Atlanta. And they have meetings, every couple months. And also, along with Matthew, the Atlanta Society of Finance and Investment Professionals, which is the local CFA chapter. And they have meetings, seems like every couple of weeks, mm-hmm. on some speaker on something. There's one actually lunch today that I'm headed to after this. So I go to those. I also go to trade shows. I've stopped going to as many of the trade shows that are designed for my peers, the ones for financial advisors, because there comes a point which is it's repetitive and it's sort of simplistic and it's for sort of the newer people.
Yes.
And I've moved more recently to going to things like the Heckerling Conference down in Orlando, which is primarily designed for estate planning attorneys. So if you're doing high-end wealth management and tax strategies and so forth, I get a lot more out of that type of program than I do the ones that are designed for financial advisors at this point. Of course, early in my career, I went to all those, thought it was great,
right.
But now it's there's not really anything new there. I also teach the Certified Financial Planner courses, a variety of places, and teach the review class for people sitting for the exam. So I should be an expert already on all the basic stuff. So.
Yeah, right. Well, what keeps you motivated now? You've got a successful business. You've been in the industry for a while. What are some things on a regular basis that, continues to motivate you?
Well, the business growing is obviously motivating. I think Matthew sort of alluded to that. We take on about 5 or 6 households a year that we want to work with. And seeing that grow, seeing them achieve success. We don't define, a little different than Matthew, he's focused a lot on how the portfolio did year to year, which is certainly important. And we focus a lot on, will you achieve your goals someday, and try and actually distract people from paying attention to the day-to-day,
right.
Month-to-month.
Long-term.
variations in the market. Yeah. The analogy I've been using a lot lately is think of the market as a guy playing with a yo-yo while walking up a hill. Stop focusing on the yo-yo. He's walking up a hill. You know, if you stay in the market a long period of time, while there's no guarantees, historically, you've certainly done well. And our objective is to make sure people can retire comfortably while sleeping at night in the short run. And that's really the goal.
Mm-hmm. And it's always been kind of a mystery to me because there's lots of different ways for financial planners to make money, right? So how does financial architects, how do you guys generate revenue?
Yeah, and I'll give you another. That's probably the best question today.
Right.
If you're looking for a quality financial advisor, which is a question that comes up a lot, and all the consumer advocates are sort of in alignment on what you should do, and Matthew and I are both in the group that would be recommended, is number one, find somebody who has at least the minimum credentials, which I would say is a CFP, Certified Financial Planner.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have wealth over, say, $500,000 or $1 million, you probably want somebody who's a CFA also, which is the Chartered Financial Analyst. And then the second really key part is, while there's people with a lot of different business practices who do a good job, if you're trying to sort of narrow down, is the person less conflicted and going to do a good job for me? If you find somebody who's fee only, not fee based, but
fee only,
which means that they're only getting paid by the client, they're not getting paid by the product provider, it's much less conflicted business model, your odds of success are much higher.
Okay. That's definitely sound advice for sure. Love to turn the conversation here as we begin to close more towards entrepreneurship. You know, this is something we see all the time, whether you're a startup, kind of cupcake kid, you know, starting your first business, or you're a successful CEO of a Fortune 500 company, which we've had in here many times. They all have that dream of entrepreneurship. So from your perspective, David, do you find that you were always an entrepreneur and just came in it too late in life? Or did you find yourself kind of chasing that dream, you know, later after many years in corporate America?
No, I was always an entrepreneur. I always intended to be self-employed. Some days I can barely work for me. I've worked in some large organizations, and I think both of us were glad when I sort of moved on, not mm-hmm. because I did a bad job, because I have, as most entrepreneurs have, a bias for action. I like to get stuff done. And at one point I'd worked for a broker dealer that got bought by a bank. And, you know, as banking world is sort of notorious for meetings about meetings and so forth. And that kicked in. And so I think they were happy when I resigned to go do something else.
So you were always an entrepreneur.
Always an entrepreneur.
Just waiting to a later stage in your career to actually pull the trigger on your business. Was this your first business?
Well, essentially, when I mentioned right out of college, I was a stockbroker. And that is sort of an entrepreneurial thing. It's just you're within a larger umbrella. So I really liked that, but I wanted to do it a better way. And so I felt like it took a while for me to sort of get the knowledge I needed to do a good job and so forth. But I've always sort of hustled and done stuff and done a lot of teaching, a lot of consulting. I'm a consultant for a couple of firms. I work as an expert witness. Occasionally people sue in their advisor.
That's kind of fun.
Yeah. Just to see what's, I don't do a lot of it, but every once in a while, it's sort of fun to see what happened there and what went wrong. And
We've had forensic accountants on the show before. That's always interesting too, where they go back years into people's finances, a couple who owned a business together and now they're divorcing, what have you. So looking back upon your whole entrepreneurial journey, is there some early lessons that you experienced that you wish you had known then that you do know now?
Well, a couple things. I don't think there's anything that I didn't know then, but a couple things that proved out to be really valuable is, one, have a good mentor. Have somebody who is a few years ahead of you. I was very pleased when I started my practice that a lot of decisions you make, you're not really sure, and some stuff's hard to change. For example, pricing. If you started charging clients a certain way and then you decide that's not the great way to do it, that's very difficult to change. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, Matthew and I are both fee only. If you start out within a broker dealer and then you want to break off later, that's a challenging transition sometimes. And I felt like we made all the really big decisions right the first time, which makes your life much easier as you go. And I'm sort of a fan of over-engineering things in the short run. I tell people I'm long-term lazy.
Okay.
I'm not short-term lazy. I'll spend a lot of time to engineer something really well and get the processes and everything down so that in the long run, it doesn't require a lot of work.
Right.
And so
I think I can identify with that. I think I would say I'm the same way. Let's get all the work done, get our ducks in a row now so I can sit back a little later and experience all that early hard work. So
that's right.
Let's bring Matthew back into the conversation about entrepreneurship. So you started in 2011, but you spent some time in corporate America before then. Did you think you were always an entrepreneur just waiting for that opening, or did you kind of find yourself backing into this situation?
No, I'd say I've always been an entrepreneur. I started out a tax practice back in 2005, shortly after I graduated college. That allowed me to get a lot of the clients that I have for financial planning and investments. I've kind of always felt when you're in corporate America, you're kind of just a little bit of overhead and there's lots of non-productive time.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always took pride in kind of creating my own revenue streams.
Yeah, no, that's definitely, you know, you kind of set your own destination and sail your own journey there. But how do you see your business growing, taking your entrepreneurship to the next level from here and beyond?
Yeah, I just need to continue to get out there and meet new clients and just do a good job for the existing clients. And usually people talk and have word of mouth will grow through that way.
What about mentorship? Has that been important for you?
Yes, I had a couple mentors that helped me through the CFA program, provided me references, and that's something that I appreciated.
Yeah, no doubt. And the mentee role as well, being able to give back once you reach a certain level of success is always important as well, because that's something we hear time and time again here on the Atlanta Business Radio Show and Business Radio X Network. And so a little more personal about what do you like to do in your off time, Matthew, when you're not preparing people's financial long-term plans? What do you like to do to get inspired and take your mind off work?
I love to read. So I read a lot about
financial planning.
Yeah, I would say more about markets, economics.
Yeah. Any good books you could recommend for our listeners that you're currently exploring?
No, I guess I would say if you're looking for a good investment book, the best book that I think is The Intelligent Investor by Benjamin Graham.
Okay. Intelligent Investor.
The Intelligent Investor.
Yeah, very nice. So we'll definitely encourage our listeners to go check that out. So if you can't find Matthew behind his desk working hard over there at his office, you'll find him behind a book learning more about work and so much, or here on Atlanta Business Radio. So thank you very much for joining us today. Can you remind our listeners how they can find out more information about yourself and your organization?
Yes, my website is investmeridian.com. That's investmeridian.com. And I can be reached at 404-585-5946.
Links will be posted on our website later today, so you can link up with Matthew there. So thank you again so much for joining us. Come back on the program if you have something new or exciting to share about your business, or if you have some industry insight that we need to kind of get out to our audience too, as you are the man to go to. So thank you again, Matthew.
Thank you very much.
All right. And David, for you, what do you like to do in your off time?
Yeah, it's we're both very, very boring. And I read a lot also, and I probably read 3 or 4 hours a day. And a lot of it is business related. Mm-hmm. You asked for a book recommendation. I'm reading a great book right now by William Bernstein, A Splendid Exchange. It's a few years old, but it's about the history of commerce and trade and so forth in the world from the earliest times up through today. And I haven't finished it yet, but his books tend to be very good. And I read a lot of stuff like that. I find that as financial advisors, if you read historical books, not ones necessarily written now about previous times,
right,
but ones written in the time. If you read a book that was written in the 1920s about what's going on with investing, it helps you see that it's really not different. It's really the same. So in 2008, when most of the industry's running around like, you know, the wheels are coming off, I'm looking at it going, this is entirely normal. This happens all the time. There's right, absolutely no reason to panic here. This is not even a 3 standard deviation event. It's just a completely normal thing. And I think that gives comfort to the clients when they know that you sort of have this long-term broader perspective and are not just reacting to whatever's on the news media that day.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you heard it here, folks. You can find both these gentlemen reading books or working hard to save you money and get your financial house in order. So remind our listeners, please, David, how they can find out more about you and your company.
Sure. My firm is Financial Architects, and the website is financialarchitects.com. financialarchitectsllc.com. Mm-hmm. And phone number is 770-517-8160.
And you just service clients in the Atlanta area from all over?
All over the country, actually. About half our clients are in Georgia. The other half are coast to coast. And we have a couple of international clients as well.
Excellent. So thank you so much for taking the time out to join us. Please come back and be a guest. We'd love to feature you and your organization again here on Atlanta Business Radio.
Great.
And we are Business Radio X. We amplify the voice of business. So if your company is out there doing something interesting to generally serve your market, your community, and your profession, reach out to us directly through the contact page at businessradiox.com. Thank you to Stone Payton and Lee Cantor, and on behalf of the entire Business Radio X Network, I'm Ryan McPherson. We will see you on the radio.